Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and was put in an orphanage by his mom at age 8. He was awarded a football scholarship to Michigan State University and was co-captain in 1973. He eventually earned a Ph.D. and has been a special education teacher for 33 years. His 30-year dream was turned into reality when he and his wife, Cindy, founded two orphanages in Mexico. His name? Dr. John Shinsky. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Dr. John Shinsky, the Associate Professor and Department Chairperson for Leadership and Human Resources in the School of Education at Grand Valley State University. John, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here, Jack.
Can you start by talking about your mom and your dad?
Well, Jack, I was born in Lorain, Ohio, and my dad was 59 and a half, and my mom was 21. And my grandmother lived with us. We actually rented our home for literally 100 years. I had 11 half-brothers and sisters, of which I hardly ever saw, and found that, you know, several of them were in jail, and so it was just primarily my dad, my mom, and my grandmother living together in Lorain.
What did your dad do?
My dad worked at the steel mill in Lorain, Ohio.
And what did you learn from your mom?
Well, I learned quite a few things from my mom. Jack, frankly, much of my learning took place after I became an adult because of the situation that took place and my mom placing me into an orphanage. I didn't realize a lot of things and the reasons behind what she did until I actually got to a point where, as an adult, I could realize the sacrifice that she made by giving me up. So I learned a great deal in relation to sacrifice. And probably the most significant aspect of love, a parent having an 8-year-old child and deciding to give that child up is a pretty difficult thing that a child doesn't understand, but not until you become an adult do you really realize what happened.
You're 8 years old, your dad dies. Mm-hmm. Later that year, you set the house on fire. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I was just playing with matches in the house, and all of a sudden the mattress started on fire. And then I went down and said to my grandmother, I need a glass of water because I thought I was going to put the fire out. And the next thing I knew, I looked at my mom was at the top of the stairs, and our house was burning. Fortunately, it didn't burn down, but that was kind of the last straw. I was from a very tough neighborhood in Lorain, and a lot of things took place in that community. But without my dad around and my mom taking care of my grandmother and so on, I think I just became a little bit more than what she could handle, and that kind of put the icing on the cake.
In doing research on you, Doctor, you said once two guys showed up one day and put me in a car to take me to an orphanage. That's the last I saw of my mom for a long time. Talk about the orphanage.
Well, that was an interesting experience, Jack, as I look beyond. I can remember just being a little guy standing at the door with my bag and these two guys showing up and then just driving away, and I looked out the back window of the car and didn't realize that I wasn't coming back. I kind of had a sense that I was coming back, but I ended up at Parmadale Orphanage in Parma, Ohio, and they placed me into a cottage. It was an all-boys, well, there was one side of the orphanage was boys and the other was girls. They put me into an orphanage, or a building that was of young people that were older age than I was, so that I wouldn't quite be the toughest guy. But in that orphanage, it was an interesting environment. I lived with all different types of young people, and you owned nothing. All you owned was a toothbrush. You'd go up to a bin every day and you'd pick out your clothes. And then you'd more or less function in that orphanage. The toughest kid ruled. The nuns ruled too. And you just followed orders and more or less were taken care of in a good environment. I can remember one time I said to the nuns, there was this young man we could watch TV on Sunday, and only Sundays, and there was something like a war type of movie going on, and this young man would get in a fetal position and start screaming and squealing and kind of going behind the couch, and I said to the nuns, what's the matter with this kid? And the nuns said, well, he saw his mom and dad get murdered, and this is the way he handles the situation. So there were all different types of children at the orphanage, different abilities, disabilities, different experiences.
At one point, the nuns had you write a letter to your deceased dad. Why did they do that, and what did you say in that letter?
Well, I think any young person who has lost a parent goes through quite an emotional experience. And, of course, I was having a difficult time not only of losing my dad, but also being in another environment and not really knowing what was going to happen in the future. But as the nuns talked to me more about my dad and so on, I think they realized that I had to put some closure to this situation. And they took me out one day and they said, write a note to your dad, and then they put it into a balloon, and then they let the balloon go and said, you know, that's, you know, you have to give your message to your dad and let it go. And that was, as far as feeling, I think as a 8-year-old, you know, emotionally, you're dealing with the loss and that type of thing. But you know, having a parent or having anybody that you lose and you don't get an opportunity to say anything to them before they go is a quite an emotional experience.
At age 12, you go to a foster home. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I was blessed to go to a foster home in Lyndhurst, Ohio, just outside of Cleveland. Bob Martina and Tom Weiss were kind enough to take me into their home. I was blessed to go to start in a school locally, and then I went to Cleveland St. Joseph High School, and I think that was kind of the turnaround of my life, from both developing as an individual and developing as an athlete and also a servant.
We're talking to Dr. John Shinsky. When we come back, we'll talk to him about reconnecting with his mom. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Dr. Sean Shinsky, who went to St. Joseph High School, and Coach Bill Gutbrod was the football coach for 41 years. He had Desmond Howard, the Heisman Trophy winner. He had Elvis Gerback. He had Clark Durant, the Golic brothers. But he said the best that ever played for him was Shinsky. Talk about your high school career and talk about reconnecting with your mom.
Well, my high school career was a tremendous experience. Cleveland St. Joseph's High School is an outstanding school. It not only prepares you on a personal and academic level, it also prepares you as a human being to be a contributing person. And Coach Bill Gutbrod, Coach John Story, my wrestling coach, were just outstanding leaders and knew exactly how to handle me and get the most out of me. So our football team that particular year was 10-0-0, and we learned an awful lot together as a group in relation to values and all the different kinds of things that were important. But St. Joe's, as a high school, left me with a tremendous amount of values in relation to how to deal with people, how to interact with people, and how to perform to your greatest. I went through the various programs there at St. Joe's and then not only played football but wrestled, and went ahead and had our graduation at high school. And it was kind of interesting because at the graduation I had an opportunity to interact with my friends and so on, and one of my buddies came up to me and said, you know, this lady came up and asked if that was John Shinsky. And as I glanced and the lady took off, it happened to be my mom. And I didn't realize it until after she left. So That was an interesting experience to see my mom at that time after not seeing her for a long period of time.
And then you went and found her. How did you find her?
Well, at age 18, I was no longer a ward of the state. So I went back to Lorain, Ohio. Just one day I drove back and I knocked on the door, and there was my mom. As I walked into the house, I saw pictures of me from football, so I knew she kept up with me, which was surprising because I didn't know that she did. She didn't have a phone. We literally, again, rented our house for 100 years, so we didn't have much. I went ahead and put a phone in. I decided to maintain contact with my mom, and I finally, once I ended up getting a scholarship to Michigan State University, a football scholarship, I ended up bringing her up to Michigan State to see me.
You're 20 years old, and one day you ask your mom, why did you give me up? What did she say?
Well, that was a question that kind of lingered with me for quite a long time because I couldn't understand why someone would give someone up. And it was probably the most significant answer that I ever got. I'm sure my mom thought about it. But when I asked her, why did you give me up? My mom said, because I loved you more than I love myself. And that was quite surprising to me because I didn't look at it from that perspective. I really looked at it from my own perspective, you know, the implications of being given up and what happens and all those kinds of things. But I never realized the sacrifice that she made and ultimately what she was hoping to happen for me in the future.
At Michigan State, you played defensive tackle for 3 years, co-captain senior year. Your roommate is a Football Hall of Famer, Joe DeLaMalier, who said that the toughest football player he ever saw was Shinsky. Talk about playing football for Duffy Doherty and that experience.
It was an exceptional experience to play at a Big Ten school and with some of the players that we had, which is DeLaMalier and Brad Van Pelt and Billy Joe Dupree and Eric Allen. It was just a tremendous group of athletes. Brian McConnell, we had 11 players drafted that year. They were exceptional. It was exceptional in many, many ways. The Michigan State athletic program is exceptional. Playing with the various athletes and being able to take advantage of a college education at a school such as Michigan State was a tremendous opportunity for me. Joe and I had our own values in relation to playing football. We gave 200% on the field. When we get across from each other, we just beat each other up every day in preparation for a game. So by the time we get on the field, we wouldn't have any problem handling anybody that we played against. But Joe and I would spend all kinds of time, extra time, practicing and lifting and working out and did nothing but eat, sleep, and drink football. And that's just the way it was.
In 1983... you earn a PhD. You bring your mom, you buy her a new outfit to come to your graduation. Talk about that experience.
Well, that was quite an experience because prior to that, I had an opportunity to bring her up to a football game. So I got a chance to meet her after I went to the home and so on and had her come up to a spring game, the green and white game. And having my mom see me for the first time, of which I knew to play football at Michigan State, was unbelievable. I played 2,000%. I ended up being the player of the game along with Charlie Baggett, who was our quarterback, and had an opportunity to really give my mom a chance to see me. Beyond that, once I graduated, I did proceed to get my master's degree and my doctorate degree, and then I invited her up for my doctorate degree. I bought my mom a brand new outfit because she didn't have an appropriate outfit for the event. I got her hair done and all those types of things. She came to the event. We had a great time together. I sent her back home, and once she got back home, she said to my grandmother, she made the right decision in placing me in an orphanage and that I was becoming successful. That evening, I went ahead and contacted my mom, which was a Sunday night, and I said, Mom, I'm a teacher, and I have a life insurance policy, and if anything happens to me, I'm going to take care of you. And I called her back again to get her Social Security number and kind of concluded with that conversation again. Monday, I come home, and I have a message on my answering machine. It's the coroner's office from Lorain, Ohio. My mom died of a brain aneurysm Monday morning right after my graduation at 53 years old, so I had to go down to Lorain, Ohio, and actually buried my mother in the outfit that I bought for her to come to my graduation.
Mitch Albom has written a new book in the last couple months entitled One More Day. It's about a fella that's been down and out. Not that you're down and out. Mm-hmm. His mom and dad are long ago deceased. And he goes back to the hometown and he knocks on the door where he grew up. And lo and behold, his mom answers the door. So he has one more day with his mom. If you got one more day, John Chinsky, with your mom, what would you tell her?
Well, Mitch Albom was one of my favorite authors, and I think the story is amazing because it reminds me of me going back to Lorraine and knocking on the door. The only thing I could say, Jack, one more day with my mom, is the very first thing I would say to her is to let her know that she's really my hero. I haven't realized that until, as I indicated, I've been able to have a great education, a great career. I was in special education and was able to take advantage of many opportunities because of the sacrifice that she made. And probably the saddest thing about the whole thing that I would say to her is, I'm so sorry that my mom didn't have an opportunity to see me succeed throughout my career and be able to touch the lives of other people based on the sacrifices that she made for me. It wasn't about what I received in relation to shelter and food and living conditions. It's what I received in relation to being able to take advantage of opportunities and learn from her unselfishness in giving me up, that there was so many benefits that I learned through that experience that I was able to touch the lives of others and really want to continue to do that. So she actually was my hero, but I never realized it until I got much older.
We're talking to Dr. John Chinsky. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Dr. John Chinsky, who's been a special ed teacher for 33 years. John, a lot of orphans, a lot of adopted children have huge emotional issues. What advice would you give those people?
Well, the best advice I could give them, Jack, is based on my own personal experiences, and it kind of goes in a sequence from my perspective. I think the first thing you have to deal with are your personal feelings in relation to coping with the situation that you dealt with, and that basically deals with survival. That is, how do you deal with being given up? How do you deal with those issues of abandonment and concern and really feeling that you faced adversity? And my best advice would be is to take a look at that experience as a growing experience. I know it's hard to understand, but everyone faces adversity in their lives, and what you learn from that, you need to take, and you need to grow, and you need to apply in the future. So I'd say the first thing is to find coping mechanisms to be able to deal with the issue of being given up, and understand that it isn't just because of you. You can't allow that to paralyze your life. You have to be able to take advantage of the opportunities that you have before you and deal with that situation. I think the other thing is that you have to realize that you have personal responsibility as an individual, and that you've learned from this experience, and that there is a life available to you, and to be able to take advantage of that life, you have to deal with it and take advantage of opportunities. So you learn from your mistakes, you take responsibilities for your action, and you have to understand that you're the only person you can count on. That's what I learned at 8 years old when I drove away in that car. It was just me, and I learned that. Another thing that I think is important is dealing with values, establishing your own values. What do you want to be like? Who do you want to be like? And you have to do that based on your local community. You don't have a core family like other people do. And you have to take a look and admire those people in your community that are leaders, you know, and those people that you respect, those people that treat people with dignity, the humble leaders, those that are givers, not takers, those that have answers, not excuses, the people that are part of the solution and not the problem, and those people that find a way to open a door even when the door is slammed in their face. And I think you need to look at those people and you need to learn from those people. I think you also have to develop the will to succeed. You're going to get knocked down throughout your life, even harder than what you did when you were given up. And you need to know the important thing is how quickly you get up after you've been knocked off your feet.
We're talking to John Chinsky. and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to John Sinski. John, 33 years in special ed. What have those kids taught you?
Well, the young people have taught me a lot. I originally learned a great deal about my own life when I went through my experience, but at the same time, it allowed me to have compassion for other people and to learn what it's like to walk in other people's shoes. So in working with students with disabilities, I've grown so much in admiring them in relation to their character and their determination and their ability to be able to deal with challenges on a daily basis that many of people who do not have disabilities don't see, they don't recognize. And I think that's so important because these young people have, you know, they have to think well of themselves in order to function in schools and to be able to function in their communities and function with their peers. And every day is a major challenge for them. But with love, support, and determination, they can be successful. And I've seen it happen many, many times.
It's amazing how many times I've heard parents who are quote-unquote blessed with a special needs child ultimately refer to that child as our teacher, our angel, our gift from God, our hero. Why is that?
I think parents have an opportunity to see the real character and determination of their children. They see how they struggle and overcome challenges. They see how they go back and fight every day. And like I indicated earlier about values and being able to get up off your feet when you've been knocked off your feet. I think individuals with disabilities do this on a daily basis, and people don't recognize it. And I think parents see the extensive types of things that children have to do to be able to succeed. Just the amount of time it takes to get up in the morning and get dressed, or to be able to get to school, or to be able to learn, and the extra time that it takes to learn, and the time you have to invest in to do simple things that other people can do without any type of challenges. And I think parents not only admire that, but parents respect what their children have done, and they become their heroes because these children make it. And then I have to say also, while there are children that do make it, there are others that don't make it. And it's a sad situation to see when that happens. But there are children that have challenges and difficulties that far exceed what people ever see on the outside.
Kids can be brutal to each other. On the playground, in school, if somebody's different, they're mocked, they're ridiculed. What would you say to the parents of those kids?
Well, I think it's a very unfortunate situation. The most important thing I would say is to the parents of the other kids, and say to the teachers and everyone else that, you know, we need to respect everyone and respect people's dignity, and that we should look at people's ability versus their disability, or we should look at their assets versus their deficits. And I think that we have to have a society that's more embracing and supportive of people. I think it's, you know, when you think about it, an individual with a disability or a person who's different, to have to not only deal with their own personal challenge, but to have to deal with ridicule and bullying and things like that, just puts an additional burden on it. And I think we need to wipe that right out of our society. It's not appropriate. It should not be accepted, and it shouldn't be tolerated. And it's just a very unfortunate thing.
You're the chairman of Leadership and Human Services at Grand Valley State University. What does that person do?
Well, Grand Valley State University is an exceptional university, and I'm fortunate to lead several different programs. Within my department, I have the counseling program, the college student affairs leadership program, I have the special ed administration program, I have the general ed administration program that deals with superintendents and principals and academic leaders, and then I also have the special education undergrad and graduate programs. And the team that I have is exceptional. We're very much dedicated to supporting students and getting results and preparing young people to be able, young and graduate students to be able to go into the field and be able to make a difference in education. There's no other time in education that I have seen throughout my career that's more challenging than right now. We have to produce great teachers. We have to produce great leaders in schools. And that's what we're committed to within my department and within our program together at Grand Valley. All the people that teach within my within the department have all had experience in the field and are practitioners and do an exceptional job focusing on our students at Grand Valley.
For 30 years, you had a dream inside your heart. And then in 1999, you're flying to Brownsville, Texas, to conduct a presentation for an education system. And it changes your life. What was the dream and what happened on that flight?
Well, when I graduated from Michigan State University, I realized that I was blessed to not only have an education, but to be able to be blessed to go into a foster home, to get support, to be able to get a scholarship and so on. And I vowed at that time that I was going to give back. I think people who have been blessed with gifts need to look back and say, how do I give back? And I literally prayed for 30 years to be able to build an orphanage for children like I was. And so I, as you indicate, I was flying down to Brownsville, Texas to do a presentation. I sat next to a young man on a plane, and I said to him, what are you doing? And he says, oh, I'm going down for spring break to work at this orphanage in Mexico. He says, it's an awful place. It has rats and all different kinds of things. And I said, well, you know, I'm interested in that type of thing. And I said, if you would send me some information on it, I'd love to hear more about it. So he sent me some information about it, and I flew back down to Brownsville, Texas, and then I went to the orphanage, and I sat down with the people, and I said, I looked at the different things that they had at the orphanage and their conditions and so on, and they weren't very good at all. So I said to them as I was sitting there, what can I do to help you? And I expected them to say, you know, we need clothes, we need food, we need these kinds of things. They said, we need a new orphanage. And I knew right at that moment that was my calling. That's what I prayed 30 years to be able to do, and that's what I decided to do. So I asked them if they had some additional property. They had some. I added some, and then I started taking spring break groups down there. My wife Cindy went down with me for our honeymoon, and we actually built at the what we call the old orphanage now. We built 9 buildings out of wood for that group, and then we gave that to them. And then a businessman called me in Matamoros, Mexico, and said he has 17 acres of land and he likes what we're doing, and he said, I'd like to give you that land and have you build another orphanage. So right now we're in the process of building another orphanage, and Joe DeLamalier and several of my friends from Michigan State are involved, and of course we're, you know, this is a totally volunteer project, all donations, it's all based on donations. 100% of donations go directly to the project, and right now we've got 2 of our buildings up out of a total of 12, and we've got a long way to go, but we're going to make it.
How can our listeners learn more about?
I think the listeners can learn more about it in a couple of ways. The first way is to get on the website. There's a website of the orphanage. That's basically my name. It's called www.shinskyorphanage.com. That's shinskyorphanage.com. And you will see a description of the orphanage, see a description of the different types of work that we've done, the people that we've had there, and our goals. The second thing is that we have a foundation through the Capital Region Community Foundation. And if people are interested in understanding about the project or how to support the project or how to give to the project in some way, one of the best ways to do is to call the foundation directly at 517-272-2870. And as I indicated, 100% of the donations go directly to this project. There is no money taken off by anybody, any board member, any worker, anything like that. And it's just an exceptional project.
We're talking to John Shinsky. I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with John Shinsky. He and his wife Cindy have founded 2 orphanages entitled the City of Children Orphanage. John, why Mexico?
Well, as I indicated earlier, Jack, after I graduated from Michigan State, I wanted to give back. And I certainly believe strongly that giving back to your local community is extremely important. I was involved in the Special Olympics, involved in building a member of the team that built the McDonald House, worked with St. Vincent Home, Camp Highfields, United Way. I led the United Way, all types of things in our local community. And I was looking for something. As I said, I prayed 30 years to be able to do something for children. I looked at various different orphanages or places in the United States, and they continue to change. They continue to be serving all different types of young people and are making it or not making it. So, but as indicated, I wanted to be able to do something somewhere, and all of a sudden, I think that once you have faith and once you have a commitment to doing a project, you have to understand that God positions you in the place where you need to serve. And that's what happened in Mexico. That was it for me. These children in Mexico do not have advocates. They do not have people that look out for them. As a matter of fact, you have to have someone like us who has the determination and will to continue to work over through all of the barriers to be sure these children get what they're supposed to get. And that's what we can do, and that's what we continue to strive to do. So this is our commitment. This is where it is. If God directs us to do something somewhere else, we'll do it somewhere else too. But that happens to be the place where we've been chosen to give.
For 33 years, you've been a teacher. You never were an NFL football player. You could have been. So you never made millions. Teachers don't get rich. How have you ever done it financially to start two orphanages?
Well, I guess it's just through faith and determination to make it happen. We the orphanage that we're building right now, Jack, the first thing is that it's all donation. You know, we've asked people to give. We've given personally in every way that we can, and we continue to ask people to give. But we also do things in a way that to help people understand that this project is not only a great project for these young people, but it's an efficient cost out project. In other words, our current orphanage that we're looking at right now has 33,000 square feet in all of the 12 buildings. We're trying to build that at $30 a square foot. That particular component is $1 million. But at the same time, we're going to open the project, we hope, in maybe March, if we're blessed, in March or April or May, with five buildings, which is around $500,000 considering the different square footage. But we do this all through donations. People come down to Mexico. They pay their own way. When I go down to Mexico, I pay my own way. You'd be surprised at if you start looking at your own budgets and you start setting aside some resources to bless other people. I think you'd be amazed at the amount of resources that we have, we personally have, that could benefit other people who have nothing. There's 1.2 billion people on the planet who operate on $1 a day to be able to function. And some of those children are right there in Matamoros, Mexico, where we're building our orphanage.
Looking at the pictures in your literature on the website, the challenge is overwhelming. You see these little infants crawling around on heaps of garbage. How do you handle that when you go down there, John? And then how do you handle it when you come back and see what we're blessed with?
Well, it's interesting. You know, coming up as an orphan myself, I've learned to kind of accept situations as they are. You know, you're more or less dealt with the cards that you're dealt with, and you have to deal with it. So I look at it more of how do you take someone from where they are and take them to the next level? It certainly is depressing to see these children struggling for food and struggling for clothing and so on and so forth. But at the same time, I see the opportunity and I know what it took for me to get to where I am. And I know that there are so many great people that I've dealt with throughout my life and currently involved with the Orphanage Project that can help these young people have opportunities. And it's our goal with this Orphanage Project to not just give them a place to live, but to provide them safety, provide them love, provide them support, provide them spirituality, To provide them education, to teach them English so that they can be bilingual, so that they can work in the businesses in Mexico, and also that we also create the conditions at the orphanage so that they can make their own food through having their own gardens and being able not only to operate the orphanage but to be able to help people in the community. We want to change a generation of people so that they can become more independent in contributing back to the community. So any child that is born in the dump can come out of that dump and have an opportunity towards not only safety and health, but also education and vocational opportunities in the future.
In these last 7 years, what have the Mexican orphans taught you, John Chinsky?
Well, they continue to teach me humility. I think that as you take a look at what we have available to us and what we can, food and clothing and opportunities and all different types of things, they have nothing but the very basics, and then they have to struggle for food and struggle for water and so on. So they've taught me humility. They've taught me courage, that they have to come back every day and deal with a situation. I also look at them as individuals who have a great deal of compassion within their hearts. As I've taken students down to work at the orphanage and so on, many of them say, you know, these children don't have anything. I don't understand. But when you look at them, they're smiling. And I said, well, you don't understand that money, you know, food, the kinds of things you have here that you think are going to make you happy aren't the things that really make you happy. I believe giving to other people. I believe that the investment into others and the way that you guide your life. I believe that the key to life is how many lives you touch as an individual. And these young people have taught me a great deal in relation to that.
For a listener tonight whose heart is touched by what you've been saying, and they say, wow, deep down I know I should do something. I want to make a difference, but I'm so busy raising family, earning a living. What do you say to them, John?
I say that you need to take the initiative to make it happen. If you continue to postpone things and say you'll get around to them, you have to make some things a priority. Cindy and I have made this a priority of our life. It is, you know, football, education, doctorate, anything that I've done throughout my career means nothing. I think we have to look at what we want to leave here when it's all done. And what I want here is an orphanage, and that becomes your primary focus, and that becomes your primary goal. And I think that as people look at giving and what they want to do for others, they need to make it a priority.
We have 1 minute left. Final question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
I think there's several things for our young listeners. I think that whether you've been an orphan or not, there's things that you need to do with your life. I think the first thing is you need to decide to make a difference with your life and align everything you do towards that. Now, remember the saying that action speaks louder than words. You need to give back to other people. You need to appreciate the kinds of things that you have available to you. I say don't ever give up. Life isn't over till it's over. I think that you need to thank people for what they've done for you and how they've touched your life in every arena or stage of your life, whether it's your parents, whether it's your education, whether it's your coaches and so on. I say never forget where you came from. And I think probably the most important thing to me is make sure that you give back and pass on the blessings that you've received.
John Chinsky, Hall of Famer Joe DeLaMalier, not only said you were the toughest football player he ever saw, he says you're the best man he's ever met. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Jack.
Our guest next Sunday will be the author of the book, You're a Genius and I Can Prove It, Miss Kimberly Kastner. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahalo.